Hello and welcome everyone back to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. I'm your host, Jaime, and I'm here in the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast headquarters, located in my cramped closet. Today, I am very pumped. I just filmed the first ever episode of the Starter Pack series that I will be kicking off on the Hold for Hold YouTube channel, so you can find that. I'm going to have a link to the channel itself. You can find that live on Friday. I'm trying to upload every Friday. There is already a video there talking about myself the whole time. Just a little introduction to both the channel and myself in case you missed the first episode of my comeback. But yeah, we had kind of not the most eventful week in wrestling. A lot of shows happened, but I wouldn't necessarily call this like a mega or a just, I guess I wouldn't really talk about it too much if I didn't have to. But essentially, we have some big news coming, apparently. And we have some big news that happened. So let's jump in right there with the first bit of news. Kushida has seemingly left the WWE. Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful. Go subscribe to Fightful Select if you haven't already. They're fantastic resource for everything. Possibly the new Dave Meltzer. We'll see. But essentially, Kushida just let his contract run out. He's leaving WWE. Officials kind of believe he's going to go to New Japan as soon as June, which is exciting for New Japan viewers like myself because he definitely did not live up to his potential in the WWE system, both in NXT 2.0 and in NXT 1.0. Kind of a rare complete misfire on a character like that. And someone who had such a big deal upon their arrival. I mean, remember they had like a conference, like a Japanese style conference to announce that he was here. So kind of weird. I know that he got injured pretty soon into his debut, but I mean, come on, you've got Kushida on your roster, you know? But wish him the best luck. Can't wait to watch whatever he's going to do next. Following that, the other bit of news I want to get to today. Like I said, it was kind of a slow week. There were some fun stories out there, but there wasn't necessarily anything you must know. But Tony Khan apparently has a huge, huge announcement on AEW Dynamite, which is tomorrow. I'm recording this on Tuesday, the 19th. As always, I want this to be a streaming service announcement, hopefully, you know, HBO Max, so I don't have to sit through commercials when I watch Dynamite or Rampage. But more likely, it seems like there's going to be a super show between AEW and New Japan somewhere in July-ish during the summertime. And of course, in Chicago, that's what the rumor mill is apparently speculating upon. Dave Meltzer himself reached out for, a follow-up on this. Like, is there any legitimacy to this? And people said, can't say there is, but we can't say there isn't. So kind of seems like that's where this is going, which I'm excited for. There's so many dream matches that you have between the two rosters that we've never seen before, or just fresh matchups. Who will House of Torture face? That's like the pressing question on everyone's mind. Those guys are just banging out the park with just great matches. Can't wait to see them take on the Dark Order. that's next week's Dynamite. That's tomorrow's Dynamite. Let's talk about last week's Dynamite. We had a banger opening match, and it really stole the entire weekend for me. Penta took on CM Punk in just a straight-up exhibition match. It's a fun match, you guys. Definitely go check this one out. Go out of your way for this one. The crowd is super into it. Penta is one of those wrestlers who can really get the most out of crowd, whether it's just doing the Cero Muero or, you know, his facials. He really gets the crowd into this. And CM Punk is just a master at playing back towards his opponent and kind of mockingly doing the same thing. It's great. And not to mention the action itself is fantastic. Great sequences, very physical storytelling of like Punk maybe getting hurt in the match, which I don't think he did. But, you know, it's just really good match. I won't spoil it, but it does have kind of an out-of-nowhere finish that I really enjoyed. So, really set the tone for the week. Following that match, we have the Jericho Appreciation Society arriving in New Orleans. They get out of their private jet. They're kind of bragging. Out of nowhere, they're attacked by Eddie Kingston and Santana Ortiz. They steal Matt's shoes of 2.0. And they do have a match on this Dynamite, which isn't the most memorable. We'll talk about it later. But Eddie stealing those shoes was really funny. And then the fact that Matt comes out later in that match without his shoes, just cherry on top there. Following that, we kind of had a match that I really, let's just say I was looking forward to the match itself, but I was a little anxious about the repercussions of this match. It's Jurassic Express versus Red Dragon. We knew this would deliver in ring, and it did, guys. This is a really fun match. And the story of this match really had me believing we were going to see a title change. And I mean, that's about as good as you can get nowadays with someone who's so plugged in as I am to have doubt about, you know, a champion. But Jurassic Express does get the win. O'Reilly manages to get their heat back by blindsiding the champs with a chair and then holding up the titles, throwing them back down. FTR come out. They confront pretty much everyone on the ramp. I'm really looking forward to what's next here. I was scared that Red Dragon was kind of like going to fall off, leave this feud. But with that ending, it was a clean win for Jurassic Express, but the post-match beatdown really set another tone. So it's like, okay, they're going to continue this. Hopefully this leads to a triple threat tag match. And my biggest hope would be a triple threat ladder match for those AEW titles where FTR could pick up their second reign. But who knows? I mean, I like Jurassic Express enough. They just need I think a lot of champions, especially in AEW right now, they need their era-defining feud. And they seemingly are building to that with Red Dragon. And I think it has potential. But when you have a team like FTR so hot right now, it could really mess things up there. Because I don't think that Jurassic Express has had the chance to really shine like they could with another team. And FTR or Red Dragon are a great start there. Following that, though, we have a Blackpool Combat Club. I almost said something else. But they have an interview, and it's essentially just to build to their match on Rampage against the Gun Club. Mox calls the Gun Club a bunch of goofs, and they don't want more goofs in AEW. Following that, Tony Schiavone interviews Jamie Hayter and Tony Storm, and he kind of subtly announces that they're going to have a first round match in the Owen Cup. This is a true main event quality match, so hopefully it gets the time it needs to shine, because as we'll talk about later, the women's matches in AEW don't get the time they deserve. Following that, we had the really fun, kind of goofy, but I enjoyed it. It was MJF versus Captain Sean Dean. As noted, Sean Dean picked up a win against Sean Spears last week, I believe by disqualification. It was one of the few disqualification finishes in AEW history, and now we get the first ever count out victory on AEW Dynamite, as Wardlow, well, MJF kind of has the match, you know, going his way. He puts Captain Dean to the outside. Wardlow shows up, a swarm of security surround him, but in doing so, it accidentally blocks MJF's access to get back into the ring. And he gets counted out, but because of it, there's a great moment there where MJF realizes he's screwed. And so he gets on the mic and tells the ref, I believe it's Remsburg, that if he doesn't count the final count, he'll triple whatever Tony Khan's given to him. Remsburg thinks it over and just counts him out. And at that point, once he gets counted out, Wardlow kind of leaves peacefully. MJF goes in the ring. He's really pissed, and he tries to strike Remsburg, but Spears calms him down. He didn't want to eat that fine. But this will inspire MJF to, instead of allowing Wardlow to keep doing these interruptions, he wants Wardlow to be slaughtered by none other than the Butcher. So they're going to have a match, I believe, tomorrow or Friday on Rampage. So that should be a lot of fun. Poor Butcher's going to eat a pin, but if they give this match a little bit of time, it could be a good Hoss fight there. So I really love what they're doing with Wardlow. I think these last couple weeks have been fun and they've been consequential, which, is kind of the risk when you're repeating the same idea of him, just running in the arena unabulged and just fighting every security guard, which is fun to watch, but it could get a little repetitive and non-consequential. But with him costing both members of the Pinnacle their victories and their matches, then it's like, also I believe they did this with FTR too. The FTR lost a match because of it. So it's like he is single-handedly causing destruction for the entirety of the Pinnacle. And it's good stuff. It truly is getting Wardlow over even more so. And it's gonna be huge whenever we have MJF and Wardlow in the same ring, which I think is coming soon. So we'll see. Following that, we have the Jericho Appreciation Society taking on Eddie Kingston, Santana, and Ortiz. So I believe it was Hager, Garcia, and Jericho on behalf of Jericho Appreciation Society. It was an all right match. It had a real kind of a weird finish. Essentially, Jericho grabs his baseball bat, hits Eddie Kingston on the back as Eddie's like running the ropes, and Garcia gets the pin off of that. And I mean, he gets a pin. He doesn't roll him up. He just pins him. Kind of looked a little weak. And I think this is just, this is just to get that plain old match out of the way, because I feel like this is heading towards Stadium Stampede. And the segments themselves, like the promos and the interactions between the teams outside of the ring, have been really fun. So this match itself didn't necessarily kill the feud for me or anything, but it does feel like they're just going to push this along so they can get a Stadium Stampede match, which will definitely be a great match. Following that, we have the biggest downer possibly of the weekend, Marina Shafir taking on Sky Blue. I saw a lot of criticism on this match just because it was so short. I believe it was only like 2 minutes and 30 seconds. Far too short. And as we know on this podcast, I have criticized WWE for doing the same thing in their Queen's Crown tournament. And this isn't the way you do that, especially with this being Marina Shafir's first AEW Dynamite appearance and you're selling her as a contender to Jade. I understand having her win a match in a short amount of time can seem impressive, but this one did not seem impressive. This felt rushed. There was some great character moments from Jade. She's taking notes, kind of half-heartedly taking notes, which I love. I love half-heartedly taking notes. And then JR commenting the baddie section. They're a bunch of good-looking women. I don't know why. It's gross, but it is funny. Following that, though, let me just hold on 1 second. Their women's division in AEW has truly been their worst booked division. Worst, no storylines really of prominence right now outside of the world title picture. This needs to change. WWE, for all the slack they get, they do give a great amount of time to their women's talent. It may not be the best creative, but the time is there and stars get over with time. Even if they're put in bad creative, most of the time these people are talented enough to get themselves over. So that allotted time is very important. And hopefully the backlash from this kind of kicks them a little bit in the pants and lets them know that we're not accepting this kind of behavior from this company. Following that, though, we had Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland. I think that's his full name now, right? Swerve Strickland. Or it might still be his first name, which I'm forgetting. Let's just call him Swerve. Keith Lee and Swerve versus Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks. This was a really fun match. Ricky Starks is so over, especially when they go to the South for some reason, like Texas, Louisiana. They love Ricky Starks. So he's super over. This match, ton of fun. Definitely go out of your way to watch this one. A lot of inventive spots here. Taz does get involved with the finish, which allows Powerhouse Hobbs, one of my favorites, to hoist up Keith Lee, nail him with a spine buster for the win. Great moment for Powerhouse Hobbs. He will be eating a pin when they go one-on-one, but that one-on-one match should be a lot of fun. If they let it be like a no DQ match, it could be a lot of chaotic fun, which I'm always here for. A lot of people, again, criticizing like the use of Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, but I kind of see that being their recipe. Like, Miro is a great example of someone who came in as a like an upper mid-card level guy from WWE, although I do believe that Keith Lee and Swerve have main event potential, and so does Miro now. But essentially, a big name comes in, they put him kind of in the mid-card to begin with, and then they let them build their way up instead of shoving them right into the main event scene. And I think this works a lot of the time later on. In hindsight, a lot of time we give them credit for this because nothing seems rushed. It doesn't feel forced that they're in these positions. And I think Keith Lee and Swerve are not going to be mistreated later on down the line. I think they're in a great spot right now, and I think they're only going to go up from here. Following that, we had the match that I was looking forward to the most this week. Minoru Suzuki taking on Samoa Joe, and it was brutal, guys. They open with just as many chops as a chest can bear. Joe, I'm not going to talk beat for beat into this match. Just go watch it because it's intense, it's gut-wrenching, and it's fun. Joe does pick up the win with a muscle buster, finally capturing the ROH TV title, which is apparently the only title in Ring of Honor he'd never won, which makes sense, I guess. He kind of was always above it. Immediately, though, Lethal gets on the mic. Last week, I think I mentioned that he had a present for Samoa Joe. So Lethal was like ringside with a little box whole time. And then he comes out, he says, it was kind of funny. He's like, I have the present for you. And then he opens the box and it's just his crusty middle finger right in the center. And Joe looks just so annoyed by this entire thing. So beneath him. But then the lights go out. They come back up. Crowd's thinking, oh, it's Cesaro. It's another huge debut. And no, it's Sonamon Singh, which I feel so bad for the dude. But not that bad because, like, come on. He attacks. It's he's a new signing for a... Not a new signing, sorry. He's been with AEW since 2021. He's been training at the Nightmare Factory and all this time. He's a former NBA player, I believe. So he's huge. He's like a 7-footer guy. He makes Joe look average. But he attacks him. He puts like that stupid, I hate it so much, the double claw. Like where you put your hands around a person's head and just like they're squeezing the life out of him. I don't know why they always give that to Indian people. It's such a stereotypical like Indian move for some reason. Or even just foreign move. Because didn't Vladimir, I almost said Putin. Vladimir, whatever his last name was, that guy in WWE, they always give him these weird claw moves. Like, why can't they just do cool moves? So this did not go over well with both the live crowd and the IWC, the internet wrestling community. This is just immediately panned, and I kind of agreed. It took me out of it. I didn't like this debut for this guy. I felt really bad that had to be his debut. Seemingly, word got passed to Tony Khan. Tony Khan puts out like a statement saying that he didn't like this either. He feels bad that this happened to this guy. But he doesn't really accept the blame. He's like, everything was how I wrote it until the bit with the lights turning off. That was someone else who has 30 plus years experience in the business. So I trusted him. But everything else was me. But the lights itself was someone else. Which... yes, the lights going out does create a expectation that is pretty high, you know, especially when we know the free agent market, and the AEW crowd is smart. They know the free agent market. But it's not necessarily just that. It's also the spot in the card that they did this on. It's the person they did this on. Like, it's just not, it already doesn't feel good. It's just not the, it's not the time or place. I will say, though, they do redeem this guy. They do redeem Singh himself as a performer on Battle of the Belts, which we'll talk about here in a minute. And I'll get into it there, and we can really hone out this whole debut. But I did not watch NXT UK this week, unfortunately. But I did watch AEW Rampage, so we're going to talk about that. Gun Club versus Blackpool Combat Club. So the clubs went at it. It was a good enough match. It was fine. It was fun. Yuta won with a bridging O'Connor roll onto Billy Gunn, which was very impressive. But it was also really funny because once the three counts counted, there's a GIF of this on AEW. Once the three counts counted, Yuta like has to release the bridge, and he is just sprung up by the power of Billy Gunn's legs, because Billy Gunn is like four times the size of Wheeler Yuta. So it was just like funny to watch him be sprung up like that. Like, Billy Gunn had that whole thing under wraps. Anyways, this match ends the Gun Club's undefeated trio streak, which I think was their last undefeated streak. So I don't know where they're going to go from here. I kind of feel like they might just take a pause on the Gun Club and then let them be reintroduced later down the line. Because I do think that the two sons, Colton and I forget the other one's name, I think they are good at what they do. They're pretty clean in that ring when they're not knocking themselves out with Luthes presses. But they're fun to listen to. They don't have go-away heat with me. I think they're pretty decent heels. And I can see some things going for them. If they had just the right program, I think some things can go for them. I think a good program with them, honestly, would be the FTW, you know, that whole Ricky Starks and Powerhouse Hobbs. I think those guys with Taz and Billy Gunn, I think that'd be pretty fun. Might have already happened and I'm just forgetting, but that's where I see them at. But also I want Powerhouse Hobbs kind of out of the tag scene. I want him more singles roles. Anyways, following that, we have the Butcher taking on a jobber, just squashed him, pinned him with a powerbomb just to prep for Wardlow. I will say, I know this is a little bit reading too much into it, I wish the Butcher would have had a bigger guy to squash, because I think Wardlow had someone huge from NXT to squash one time, and it made Wardlow look even more impressive because he kept picking him up for powerbombs. I think Butcher kind of should have took the same routes to show that, you know, like, he's not intimidated by Wardlow's size. But minor gripe, it's like a 2-minute match, so it doesn't really matter that much. Following that, though, we get a great Dustin Rhodes promo. He wants to challenge CM Punk for a match on Dynamite, which is happening tomorrow. And, yeah, it's just, like, really heartfelt. Like, I know you're one of the best in the world, and I think I still have it. And I know that me and Lance Archer aren't done, but I want a match with CM Punk. It was good. I definitely think Lance Archer is going to play a role in this match. He might team up and distract Dustin, and it kind of causes some rift there. Maybe this is a way to get CM Punk and Lance Archer feud to kind of buy time for CM Punk to, like an in-between feud between him and getting to the championship, because I don't think they want to take that title off Hangman yet. And when you have CM Punk challenging for a world title, you're booking yourself in a corner because the fans want CM Punk. So we're going to see about that. Following that, though, we had a Ruby Soho and Robin Renegade match. I saw some 50-50 opinions about this one. I really enjoyed this match. I thought it was fun. It was a fun little match, and it featured Twin Magic, which I don't see very often. Soho has to overcome both Robin Renegade and Charlotte Renegade to win this match. It's a fun sequence. Robin gets booted to the outside, and then Charlotte comes in. Charlotte like hits a move and Ruby kicks out. Robin rolls back in, gets a roll up near fall, and then she eats a Sister Abigail. I didn't do it justice there, but it was pretty fun. I liked it. Following that, I think we have the match of the week. I think this is the match of the week. Adam versus Adam. Adam Cole versus Adam Page in a Texas Death Match. This was a hot match. A lot of fun brawling into the crowd. Some really brutal spots. We got like a super exploder onto a stack of steel chairs from Adam to Adam. And then ultimately, Hangman crowns Cole with barbed wire. Just shoves barbed wire down on top of his head. on Good Friday of all days and delivers a dead eye off the apron through a table to retain his championship, seemingly putting a definitive end in this feud. So that begs the question, where does he go from here? Personally, I don't know. Everyone that I think he's going to eventually feud with is kind of involved with things. Like Jericho and Mox and CM Punk. I mean, CM Punk's the most free for sure, but he did just get challenged. And CM Punk versus versus Hangman is a huge match. MJF's still dealing with Wardlow. So I really don't know where they're going to go from here. An outside choice that I'm thinking is Christian. Someone that they love putting in title matches and doesn't necessarily deserve to be in those matches. But also you got Jeff Hardy now. You got Keith Lee, Swerve. This is a huge opening. I should have looked at the Owen Cup. Maybe there's the answer is for that Owen Cup. So we'll see of where Hangman goes from here. I think he's probably going to take a break, though, for a second at least. Okay, time to talk about the other show that happens on Fridays. The B Show. Friday Night SmackDown. I say that jokingly. I think they had some fun stuff on Friday Night SmackDown, mostly at the beginning, but let's discuss. First of all, we have an unaired promo with LA Knight, and I think this one went a little viral because, you know, it is kind of LA Knight's main roster call up, and they definitely changed his character, and it's very sports entertainment, but I do think it plays to his strengths as a great talker and possibly as an advocate for some people. Essentially, LA Knight is forming his own modeling management agency called Knight Model Management. His first client is Mace, and it seemingly Mace is now changing his name to Face. I hate it. I hate the name change. I wish they would have just reverted back to calling him whatever his name is. I already forgot, but just call him his name. Anyways. Or at least just give him a new name. And there's so many names other than Face. That's so bad. But I did dig the promo. I thought it was a good bit. I thought LA Knight knows how to work that crowd. And honestly, anything to get the Retribution branding off of everyone involved in that. And hopefully we see Dominik Dijakovic out of that branding as well. Because T-Bar is the worst name out of everyone. Like, as a just objective, I know Gunther is the worst name change, but the worst name is definitely T-Bar. So yeah, I'm hesitant because you never know with WWE, but from what I saw, I like it. I give LA Knight some credit. He had one of my favorite feuds of my favorite last feuds of NXT 1.0 for that $1 million championship with Cameron Grimes. So I'm giving him a little bit of slack here because I think he has the potential to do some big things, and by big I mean like IC US title, but you know that division needs people right now, and I think this guy's he's fresh, he can do the stuff like that. Following that though, to actually open the show, we have RK-Bro and the Usos doing a promo that's a little bit too long, but it gets intense for a second. Randy Orton is just having a great time with this character, and he gets fired up about this unification bout. He starts the promo by just like appreciating the Usos, talking good about their family lineage and saying like, you know, they're in their ring and they're gonna respect that, whatever. Usos come out, they're not respectful. So instead, Randy responds, he's like, freak that, brother. This is my ring, my show, Riddle's ring, Riddle's show. And those lines have been stuck with me all weekend. I found that delivery so well done, so genuine and impassioned. It made me excited for their eventual match, even though I've watched RK-Bro wrestle way too much this entire 2 weeks. I'm still looking forward to it just based off this promo alone. So they do the promo. The Usos sneak attack Riddle, I believe Jimmy sneak attacks Riddle, and so Riddle demands to have a match with him later, so we will have that in the main event of SmackDown. Following this, Naomi and Rhea Ripley have a great match. Probably the best women's match I watched of the week. It got me really excited for their Raw Tag Team title defense, which we'll talk about later on, but Rhea wins here with just a really strong, what is it called? Riptide. She wins with a Riptide and a great, full body pin, which I always appreciate, a full body pin. Following that, we have Madcap Moss and Corbin continuing their feud. I'm not going to talk about the specifics because it's just kind of same old, he said. But somehow Humberto Carrillo got dragged into this and he had to eat a pin to Madcap Moss. So they had a match, Madcap wins. Following that, we have Drew Gulak interviewing Charlotte Flair. I would have gotten up in arms if I didn't think that this was kind of just a one-time deal for Gulak, because he's interviewing her and she gets into a real frenzy when he's challenging her about tapping out to Ronda. She doesn't believe that she tapped out to Ronda. So she tells him to leave the ring. He turns around to leave. She chop blocks him from behind and locks in a great looking figure eight and has to be broken up. And I'm pretty sure that's the only reason they had him interview people or interview her here, was to get that figure eight spot, which was cool to see. I think Drew is another one of those guys who I love, but isn't going to get the shine he deserves in WWE. What he does is not built for the WWE style. I think last I heard he's doing producer work. So I think that's a great fit for him because he knows how to tell an in-ring story. If you want to watch a really good Drew Gulak match, go watch his match with Matt Riddle on NXT TV. I forget the episode, but I'm sorry, you can search it. It's a great, you're in our house now moment. And Gulak has some great gear for that, like a boxing hoodie. Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Following that, we have Gunther and Ludwig doing a video promo. Basis is they're keeping their gimmick. The mat is still sacred to them. Gunther is still the ring general, which is kind of big, you know, as we just talked about with LA Knight losing his gimmick, essentially, or having to pick up this new one. Having Gunther be able to keep that gimmick is nice, you know, because he's good at that gimmick. He's the ring general. Following that, we have Sami Zayn and Drew McIntyre going at it again. Same as last week, Sami Zayn just gets a count out loss because he's running away from Drew, which was kind of a waste of time. It definitely was a waste of time. If you can't tell, Friday Night SmackDown was kind of a waste of time. But aside from that, Sami gets the count out loss. He runs into Pierce. Pierce is tired of this. He's going to set up a match for next week, and it's going to be a lumberjack match. That should be fun, I think. I'm hesitant. I love Sami Zayn. I love Drew McIntyre, but this feud is a lot of copy and paste, and hopefully this lumberjack match gives us some kind of, you know, real match to it. We'll see. At the least, it's going to be entertaining because Sami Zayn's going to interact with the entire roster, in which they all hate Sami Zayn. So that by itself is an entertaining thought. Following that, let's talk about the IC title match. Ricochet taking on Jinder Mahal. This is a fun enough match that sees Ricochet kick out of a Colossus, which I feel like I was the only one that cared about that because the Colossus was booked really strong when he was WWE champ. But then again, Jinder was booked to be WWE champ at one point. Ricochet wins with a shooting star press, if I'm not wrong, which was, you know, cool. Ricochet is doing okay work. He definitely needs a real rivalry. And I don't know. Ricochet is a tough one. I think he has so much potential in a storytelling aspect, especially what we saw of him in NXT was great. I mean, I bought into Ricochet as a character for the first time in his entire career, and I've been watching him for a while by that point. But his feuds with Cole and with, He Who Should Not Be Named were great starting points for him, and they're great ways to revisit a character that he kind of can do really well. Just a guy who has this freakish ability to do things other people can't, and he knows it, and he's a little confident, but he's not overconfident, And everyone else, I mean, the entire WWE crowd should know who Ricochet is. He's this guy who can do ginormous shooting star presses and 630s, you know? So it should be already something that's established, and him just kicking it up to a level. But I don't think we'll see it before his IC title reign is over. I kind of just see him losing it to Sami Zayn again, or maybe McIntyre picking it up. We'll see. Following that, we have the segment of the weekend. Sorry if I got a little loud there, but we had what I would call the segment of the weekend. Originally, it was going to be Eddie stealing the shoes, but this was gifted everywhere. Essentially, Kofi Kingston and Xavier Woods are backstage signing some merch, doing some chit-chat, and all of a sudden, Butch flies into frame and starts wailing on Woods. He, like, smoothly slides over their table, just starts punch, 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 punch. It's a great bit of camera work that is very rare for the WWE, and it was really fun. It was really good. Butch is getting himself over. Pete Dunne is getting himself over for sure in this terrible character, but him being a hothead is fun to watch, and I hope he gets some more time to shine in the ring, because his in-ring style is adjusting to it, so he's working a little bit faster of a pace. I like it. I like it a lot. It was very reminiscent. I had just listened to the Stone Cold podcast with Bubba Ray Dudley, and Bubba Ray was describing their first night on Raw, and they took on the APA. Well, they didn't take on, but they attacked the APA. And so when they go backstage and do an interview, the APA like rush the interview. And it's a great moment where the interviewer, who I don't know their name because it wasn't Michael Cole, but he goes, "Watch out!" And he leaves the frame as APA are coming in and whooping them. It's a great moment. I think it's very rarely done. And then to see this, I was like, man, this is kind of cool. It had like some beat to it, some action to it. It felt very exciting. Following that, let's talk about the main event for the night, Jimmy Uso versus Matt Riddle. Riddle and Jimmy have great chemistry. I really like this match. I've seen it a little bit too much, you know. I've seen a little bit too many RK-Bro matches lately, especially in the main event. But I will say this. I do like that they are treating this as the A story, as the A story of both brands, because this is a big moment. You are unifying both titles. I feel like the last time they did this, the last time they unified the tag titles, it wasn't treated to this degree of respect. And so to have it main event shows and to be the opening promo segment is a lot of trust in both the performers, but also in the story itself. And I think that's great. That's what you need. And but anyways, match ends with a pop-up RKO that really pops Randy, who is blatantly breaking the rules. He's inside the ring celebrating as Riddle's getting the pin. Which was really funny, but a good bit there. It was capped off. It had both a good opener with the promo segment and had a good main event. But what happened in between, other than the Butch segment, wasn't very memorable. And SmackDown is getting tougher to sit through. They have a lot more filler than I feel like they had a year ago. No Roman this week, which is fine. But you need to continue on Shinsuke's story as a challenger to Roman. So instead of that Madcap Moss match, you probably should have had a Shinsuke Nakamura match. Or at least something that challenges Shinsuke. Like someone else like Humberto Carrillo saying, why do you deserve a shot with Roman just because your partner goes down? You know, something like that. Something that's meaty, plays on history, and just, you know, delivers a good match that has consequences. But we didn't get that this week. And honestly, the matches that were on the card this week weren't that great other than the main event. So that's my thoughts on SmackDown, at least. I don't want to be too harsh because, you know, I enjoy the characters that are there. I just wish there was more there to talk about. Following that, though, Saturday night we had AEW's Battle of the Belts 2. This had some weird moments. This was definitely the most underwhelming show of the week because I kind of had high hopes for this. Mistakenly, of course, but let's start off with the biggest downer of the night, Scorpio Sky versus Sammy Guevara. Sammy Guevara. I did not care for this match. I thought it was fine, but the finish really was not for me. First of all, they had like a cat fight, which I hate. I hate the cat's fight spot where it's just two girls on the ground going back and forth like over and over on each other. Hate that spot. Really don't like it. Anyways, though, we have a low blow to Scorpio Sky for Sammy Guevara to win the title for the third time. Sammy Guevara turning heel here is fine. It's probably the best move for their character, him and Ty Conti's character, because people already don't like to see them. And so you're leaning into that there. But to do it to an already heel Scorpio Sky is just weird. It felt off when he did it. It felt off afterwards. And I kind of felt more for Scorpio Sky because this is not the position this man should be in. He was a legitimate fan favorite and contended for the AEW World title based off that alone. And to be in this spot now is just off. It's not my thing. I don't like it. I don't think this was supposed to be a double turn either. I don't think Scorpio Sky and the Dan Lambert team is going to turn face after this. So I don't know what this is accomplishing for anyone other than Sammy getting a third reign and going to third base with the title. So I don't know. We're going to see on this week's Dynamite what happens there. It really took me out of the show immediately on the jump. But following that, we have Dalton Castle and Jonathan Gresham in a really solid match. This was really fun. Tony Schiavone was having a lot of fun on commentary. He was really putting over Gresham's technical ability, saying like he is known around the world for being a great technical wrestler. And then they were having a ball with Dalton Castle's like the boys and his just antics in general. I really enjoyed listening to that. Commentary on AEW, by the way, is hit or miss for sure. But when it hits, I really have a good time. Anyways, though, Jonathan Gresham gets the win with an octopus stretch. After the match, Sonamon Singh and Lethal and Dutt hit the ring. They lay out Gresham. Lee Moriarty and Matt Sydal try to make the save, but they get laid out. And then this brings out a lead pipe wheeling Samoa Joe. He runs them off. No one's trying to mess with him. Singh doesn't really back down, but he's like corralled out of the ring by Lethal and Dutt. They don't want to see him get hit with a pipe. And this is where I think that we could have saw his debut actually be. I think one, the spotlight here is bigger and it's more focused on him, whereas his AEW Dynamite debut was kind of overshadowed by Joe winning that title anyway. So to have him debut here, I think would have been more impactful, but they did book themselves into a hole with Jay Lethal saying he had a gift for Joe. But yeah, I think this was more impactful. Singh got to hit some offense on everybody, including Dalton Castle's boys. Gave a double chokeslam on the outside, which was way more impressive than anything he did on Dynamite. So I think they did redeem himself a little bit here, but I just wish this was his debut. Following that, we had Thunder Rosa taking on Nyla Rose. This was the match I had high expectations for, and it didn't necessarily deliver. I kind of felt like the match was clunky. Rosa wins when out of nowhere Hurricane Rana roll up. She had been trying to hit like top rope Hurricane Ranas all night to no avail. Nyla Rose would just power out of them. And then for her to just, you know, do a standing one was kind of weird. And then she wins. She tries to celebrate with the crowd, and the crowd's kind of like not into it. Not as much as they should be, especially for a Texas crowd. So yeah, a little bit of a weird outing. Maybe their next match will be better. They're definitely going to have a rematch. Probably like a hardcore match or something. God knows what they'll do. But I like both of these competitors. I just didn't feel like it was the best match they could have put on. Following that, we're going to talk about New Japan's When He's the New Riot. I am not able to watch it. I got to pay for it. So I didn't pay for it yet. We'll see if I do end up watching this, but we'll talk about some of the big things that happened. Jay White face Shuda making his New Japan return from excursion. If you remember, he was the young lion for under John Moxley, who Moxley gave him the nickname Death Rider or something, because Shuda came out with a leather jacket that had that written on the back. I thought that was pretty cool. So excited to see where he goes from here. Eddie Kingston stepped up to Ishii after Ishii had apparently a really good match with Minoru Suzuki. So Eddie Kingston versus Ishii coming up. That's going to be a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to that. And then Will Ospreay and Jon Moxley tore it up. They tore it up. I watched some highlights. I love to see it. So yeah, definitely go ahead and watch that match. It's probably going to be really good. If you can, you know, afford to put down those $25, go ahead and watch that. Mox, after the match, challenges Tanahashi to their Washington, D.C. show. So that should be really fun as well. Following that, though, we're going to talk about yesterday's Monday Night Raw. Oh, boy. This is the part of the show that's like, this is where we get in deep, because I've talked about way too much wrestling. But Monday Night Raw happened. I'm going to get this out the way right now because I don't want to talk about it too much. The Edge stuff. Edge, Damian Priest, AJ Styles. It's corny. It's not good. It's great. Okay. I don't know where I'm really going with this, but essentially it's corny. Makes everyone look bad. But there are some nuggets that I like. I like Edge saying that he's always had this ability in him, but since the Brood and the Ministry of Darkness, but he's honorably chose not to use it. All these spooky powers. I don't like necessarily that it's spooky powers he has. I wish it was a little more, I don't even know, to be honest. Now that I'm saying this out loud, maybe I just don't like it at all. Because he's definitely trying to be the new Undertaker. And it's just not a role that needs to be filled. And it definitely doesn't need to be filled by Edge. If anyone should be filling that role, it's probably Damian Priest. Because he has that similar build and size. And he is intimidating and stuff. It's just, Edge is such an established character. And this is just such a rewrite of his, seemingly his entire career. I'm not big into it, guys. I really want to be, because it's AJ Styles and Edge. And they always do this with AJ Styles stuff. Like, AJ Styles versus Kevin Owens was bad because they overbooked it. And they're doing the same thing again. So we'll see. We'll see. Hopefully we get just like a really good match at WrestleMania Backlash. I kind of doubt it the way things are going. But I'm holding out hope for that. But let's actually get to the opening of Monday Night Raw. Seth Rollins calls out Cody Rhodes just to chit-chat, you know, kick it, basically. No, essentially, Seth Rollins is pleading this case. He's like, bro, that wasn't nice. You know how hard it is to fight a surprise opponent, someone you have not prepped for? That's why I lost at WrestleMania, was because I wasn't prepared, because, you know, you were surprised. And essentially, Seth Rollins challenges Cody Rhodes to face an opponent of his choice, and he'll keep it a surprise for the main event. A couple things here. Crowd loves Cody Rhodes. I haven't seen a WWE crowd be so into someone since Drew McIntyre won the Royal Rumble. So that's a pretty big deal. On the other hand, as well, we had two title matches on this Monday Night Raw, and this main event, the Cody Rhodes and surprise opponent main event, I don't like it. I really think they should have opened with this. I think it would have been more impactful and would have stayed in with the story if Seth Rollins challenges Cody, knowing Cody's going to accept. He goes, okay, then you'll have no problem facing him right now. And then Kevin Owens comes out. Because you don't have a struggle for Seth to find the opponent. He probably already knew it was going to be Kevin Owens. You don't have a struggle for Cody to accept the challenge. So you're just setting an arbitrary time for this. And if you're Seth Rollins, the architect, why wouldn't you just catch him completely off guard and have him wrestle right then and there? that's just me personally. I think that would have been a better pacing for this match, and I think it would have gave some more, I think it would have made one of the title matches more impactful. Speaking of which, next up we're going to talk about the WWE Women's Championship match. It's too short of a match, first of all. For a three-hour show, excuse me, it's too short. It's really fun, though. Rhea Ripley does eventually end up eating the pin after a backstabber from Sasha Banks, and which goes into like a bubble bomb from Naomi, like combo move, whatever. Rhea Ripley eats the pin after Liv is unable to save her. Rhea then turns on Liv Morgan after the match. I'm tired. I am truly tired of the women's tag teams getting together and breaking up every single month. I'm tired of it. Like, if you're going to have a division of tag team wrestlers, you need to have some tag teams that stick around longer than 90 days. You know, it's really not good. I don't like it. It makes the titles feel unimportant because they're constantly out of challengers. So that's my thoughts about it. Rhea by herself is great, but I also was really digging Rhea and Liv. And the split could have been better executed. It could have been at Backlash or at another pay-per-view. Like, build to this with actual tension from their matches, not just because of, you know, one match or two segments. I'm not huge on this. More so because it happens every month. How can I care about something that I know is going to happen like clockwork, you know? Anyways, but I mean, just backtrack. Rhea's going to go off and probably face Bianca, and that's going to be great. Liv, I don't know where she's going to end up. She'll probably face Bianca too, and that's going to be great. Everyone's going to be fine after this. It's just I want more. I want more storytelling from this. And the talent's great. It's just I want something behind them. Anyways, Sonya Deville comes out after this, and she's explaining how hard she worked to become the official that she is. And then when she saw the open challenge that was issued by Bianca, she had to take advantage of it, because she's a competitor first. Bianca comes out. They argue. Eventually, Sonya gets scooped up for a KOD. But Sonya's holding the mic still and yells at Bianca to unhand her, and or else she'll strip her of her title. So Bianca puts her down. The payoff to this, later on, we see Sonya bumping into Adam Pearce. And she's like, did you see what happened out there? I hope there's a big fine, blah, blah, blah. Pierce is like, yeah, I'm already taking care of it. This shit's going to be fine. Bianca comes into frame, and she's like, I'm here to pay my fine, and pulls out a crisp $1 bill. And that's how much the fine was. And Pierce accepts the $1 bill fine and also lets Sonya know that she's under official investigation from the higher-ups for her actions as a WWE official. My guess is, so they announce later that Sonya and Bianca will face off for the Raw Women's Championship on Monday Night Raw this coming week. My guess is the match is either not going to happen because of this investigation, or the match is going to end in a really wonky way because of, I don't know, if this investigation. I really think that this investigation bit is important to the story they're going to tell and will lead into kind of a stalling effect until WrestleMania Backlash, where they'll actually have this match. I could be completely wrong and they'll have the match and she'll lose clean, but I think there's more to this. I hope there's more to this, at least, because I would love to see Mr. McMahon give Sonya a lie detector test. Speaking of which, Ezekiel passed his lie detector test. He really is Elias's younger brother. This is a great segment. This is really goofy, but it's really fun. Ezekiel and Kevin Owens and Chad Gable just are out there trying not to make each other laugh. Gable is the one administering the lie detector test because Kevin Owens says he's the smartest wrestler on the roster. And Ezekiel and Gable eventually end up having a match. And Gable nearly taps out to a single leg Boston Crab until Otis rushes the ring and just attacks Ezekiel, causing a DQ finish. But yeah, this is getting over with me. This is more over with me. Not more, but it's on the same level as like the bum-ass Corbin storyline. Like, it's really entertaining and it's not overstaying its welcome. I'm here for it. I liked Elias before, especially like his first couple months, maybe his first year of being on the main roster. I enjoyed Elias a lot. Definitely think he got lost in the shuffle. This Ezekiel stuff, I don't know what the ceiling is. Probably really low, but it's really entertaining for me right now. Following that, though, we had the Street Profits taking on RK-Bro, a match that I've seen way too much, but it's always fun. Like, it's always a really good match. But, you know, at least here, I will say this, though. They did advance story as the Street Profits revealed that during the match, they had rigged the Usos music to play to distract RK-Bro. And so they say, you know, you need to watch your back, and they want the smoke. So kind of teasing a heel turn. I enjoy it, especially the continue on this. I think in hindsight, I'll really enjoy this match itself. Something that I did not really enjoy, though, is the Austin Theory Finn Balor matchup. Theory gets a clean win over Finn Balor, which is fine. The real difficulty, I hate when they do this. All the heels from the locker room come out and celebrate with Austin Theory. They hoist him up for winning the U.S. title. Why would they do that? In what logic would Apollo Crews be celebrating for someone else winning a title? What they should have done, which I would have really loved, and would have connected with the story. So Vince has been taking Austin Theory under his wing, if you don't know, and giving him all this advice. And one of Vince's advice is like, you know, you can't trust anybody. DTA. And so I held out hope for a second. A really good point to make would have been, well, one, Vince comes out for this. Let me just finish what actually happens, I guess. I got a little excited there. So the heels come out, they hoist up Austin Theory, then Vince's music hits. He comes to the head of the ramp and he's going to celebrate. So Austin Theory comes up there, meets him up there, takes a selfie with him on the ramp, and that's our new champ. Back to me, back to my brain. Back to this little hamster wheel. I was really holding out hope that when I saw the heels hoist up Theory, I'm like, oh, they're going to turn on him. And that's the lesson, you know, that's the don't trust anybody. You know, Vince comes out to the ramp and they're still hoisting him up. And then he maybe like points or something, or he gives a thumbs down and the heels attack Theory. That would have been great, guys, right? Like, I'm not crazy here. That would have been really good stuff. But didn't happen. We just get normal Vince selfie, which was funny, admittedly. Speaking of funny, we had the 24/7 division having a wedding hosted by R-Truth. Tamina is committing to Tozawa, and Dana Brooke is committing to Reggie. It's really goofy. It's harmless. It's honestly not that bad. I was chuckling throughout it. I'd probably not watch it. If I were you, you don't have to watch it, but it was fun. By the end of it, there's like title changes on title changes. I didn't keep up. But let's talk about the main event. Kevin Owens taking on Cody Rhodes, Kevin Owens being the surprise opponent. It's a really fun match. These two have great chemistry and they took some rough spots. But towards the finish here, Kevin Owens gets a back body drop onto the apron, so he's hurt on the apron. Seth is at ringside and he's yelling at Owens. He's saying, you know, you need to get your ass back in the ring. And then he fat shames him. He says, you need to get your fat ass in the ring. Very rude, Seth. We don't say things like that. Kevin Owens was not taking it. He walks out. He takes the count out loss to Cody Rhodes. And then Cody starts to celebrate. Seth throws him out of the ring. And that's how we close Monday Night Raw. And another, I'm going to indulge a little bit. This wasn't booked to the best of its ability either. First of all, it should have been the opener, especially with that finish. Second of all, you kind of just broke up Kevin Owens and Rollins. Why not just go full force with it, you know? Why not have KO take the count out loss but stays ringside? Cody goes up to celebrate. Seth pulls him down. looks to hit a pedigree, Kevin Owens delivers a super kick to Rollins. And then Cody goes to thanks KO. KO bang stunner. I mean, this is the simplest way I think I could put it. It's just something more entertaining. It adds a third element in there. But again, this is my fantasy booking of things, and that's not how WWE does things. It's just how I would like to see them, and this is my podcast after all, so I guess I get to talk about that stuff. But that was This Week in Wrestling. Those were the headlines. Let me know what you guys think. If you guys are here this, if you're hearing this far along, please leave a rating wherever you listen to podcasts. Check out the YouTube channel. I'm going to be posting every Friday at noon, new videos, stuff I don't talk about here on the podcast, stuff I might talk a little bit about here on the podcast. We'll see. But anyways, you guys, have a great week and goodbye.